Hello, hello.
Hello, finally.
Finally.
Finally, I can hear somebody.
Right. Hello.
Oh, hey, Cameron.
Oh my God, we got it to work.
Finally.
Thank God.
Bro, you have no idea. I've been trying to do this shit for the past 2 hours.
Jesus, I can't
I've
imagine.
I mean, if we went on much longer, we might as well put this on as a fucking football game or some shit.
Is Gage on?
Yeah, he's on. He's off doing some stuff. You know, it was so difficult that I had to fucking do this shit through my iPad now. My phone won't even work. Like, my
Oh,
phone won't do it. I think it's the
well.
connectivity on my phone, and I don't get why. Like, it's not like I'm on it 24/7 around the clock to the point where Verizon's like, screw you, we're not gonna let you do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Phones are screwy. Phones are definitely screwy.
Oh, they're absolutely ridiculous. It took me like 5 minutes to send you that minute voice message or whatever.
Well, I'm glad we got it all worked out and we can get this show on the road. I mean, I'm probably gonna be, I don't know, within the next 45 to an hour, I'm probably gonna be having some dinner over here because we're making curry. So should or my
Oh,
bro
I
my
love
brother's
curry.
making some
Love
delicious
curry.
curry, so I'm very excited about
Oh,
that.
curry's awesome.
So
I love spicy food, man. Spicy food is my shit. I had curry wings from B-Dubs, Buffalo Wild
God.
Wings. Pretty good. They're pretty good. But I did not expect the curry to take over about three or four wings in last time I had them. So here I am with my granddad over here panting like I'm, hyperventilating.
What in the hell did I just walk into? All I hear is my granddad and I, and then I was panting so hard I was hyperventilating.
Gage, this is Cameron. I was able to get him on. I was telling that he was Cameron's mentioning how he's gonna have some curry wings, and I was talking about how I went to Buffalo Wild Wings, and last time I was at Buffalo Wild Wings and I had curry wings, they took over about three, four wings in. The curry
Yeah.
did. I was almost hyperventilating.
You was about to shit yourself, Clay.
Oh, hey, that can be another episode for another show on another
You had a
time.
Hershey
But
squirt.
let's just say it was a legit shit show about 3 hours
Literally.
later.
Well, hi, Cameron. I'm Gabe.
Hello?
Hello.
So, Clay, so let me tell you about what happened to
Yeah.
me today. In the
All
voice
right.
of Morty.
Hey, you know I do that better than you.
How
Okay,
about
go
you
ahead.
fuck off? All right, so how about you watch the Italian Stallion?
I am the Italian Stallion.
No, Gage, it's called a porn scheme.
You do that way better than me.
Then I'll do it in Rick. Oh,
Now that I can't do. I can't do the high pitch Rick. I can't. The best I can do is
you're the man, Steve.
Frackle.
You're the man, Steve.
Like the best I can do is the gravel. I can't do the like frog in your throat
Look
stuff that he
out
does.
of some frackle, man. But it's okay. I love you, baby. You're awesome, baby. You're the man, baby.
Yep. Bro, we should do a Hey Cameron, you're walking into something pretty funny. We're doing, I don't know if you've ever watched the show Big Mouth, but me and Gage are doing impersonations over here. Gage is fucking nailing Rick, and here I am nailing Maury. I think there needs to be a thing, Gage, where we set something up where we where me and you both go off and do, like, you know how people do voice gifts? They voice over
Yeah.
gifts? Me and you need to do that with Rick and Maury, man. Put that shit on our YouTube channel, you know?
Right, well, give me a get Cameron, give us a topic and we will be Rick and Morty for a second.
Oh
Oh boy.
God. Oh God.
You
All right.
know,
How about you guys talk as Rick and Morty about Here, Clay, why don't you go ahead and start your story about how you hate sci-fi as either Rick or Morty?
All right, and this is Rick or Morty from Big Mouth, the Netflix show. So here we go.
Man, don't even get me started with fucking sci-fi. They probably shove them dildos all the way so far up their ass they can't tell which way's left.
Damn, that's not bad. I'm just going to grab the dick and I'm going to press it and I'm just going to grab the pepper, baby. That's not bad. I'm honestly impressed. That's a pretty fucking good impression, guys. Holy shit. Not bad.
Piece and pull it from us. It makes me want to go into another points game.
Well, I tell you one thing, shit pissing me off. It wouldn't even get on the fucking Annie show or whatever.
Oh my god, that
was fucking pissed off.
Dude, you got the,
I go to order.
You got the whistle and everything. You had the little like tooth whistle.
You did Maury. I'm like, it's fucking Chris. Simple. You just lower your voice and add gravel. But I have a lower registered voice anyway, so it's not that difficult for me.
Yeah, I'm an ex tenor from high school choir, so I got the these lovely high dulcet tones that just can't do the low voice stuff, unfortunately.
Heard that.
Yeah, I wouldn't take it as unfortunately, man. I'd love to be able to when I attempt to sing. I'm borderline tone deaf at times, but when I try to sing, man, I can't even pretend to be a tenor.
Yeah, it's.
It's crazy that if someone was actually willing to get footage of me trying to sing Maroon 5 at like 5 or 6, I was hitting notes that you'd look at me and think, is he transferring? You know?
I have a conspiracy theory about Adam Levine that before he walks on stage, he takes a ball of rubber bands and then he just wraps as many around his testicles as he possibly can to hit those higher notes.
It's kind of like Michael Jackson hitting his nut.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it's just this. I think he probably learned inspiration from it, if I have to be completely honest.
Oh, I think he's gone.
I think we can start, really, Cameron, me and you can start on why we hate Sci-Fi Network so much.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good starting point. I mean, I'll go ahead and say, like, I don't personally hate the network for what happened. I think there were a lot of moving parts, but I do think that they played a lot of parts in why what happened. And I'll go ahead and let you take it away on this.
All right, I have much stronger opinions about it, but I do see what you're saying about it, and I do. But the thing is, it's been like they picked this show up with a kind of marketing. Yeah. Like Sci-Fi picked it up and so we could build an audience, put it out there. And I had that odd feeling that I'm like, wait, this is on Sci-Fi Network? This is a network known for the shitty shark movies?
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing when they initially announced that it was going to be on Sci-Fi. That was something that really kind of freaked me out a little bit, because I knew even before Dead to Class and even before all the shit went down, they had a reputation of pretty much picking up a bunch of shows and then dropping them at just, you know, the earliest possible convenience for them. Like, they have a bunch of one-season wonders.
Yeah. Dead to Class is the perfect example of a one-season wonder. I think it's going to be this generation of Firefly, if you have to ask me.
I agree. I mean, nothing really comes close to the disappointment that I went through when I found out that it was canceled. It just broke my heart.
Yeah, I think you can understand mine too. I mean, I kind of fangirled for a bit before I decided I wanted to do movies. I put up a petition for the show to get a second season, and we were able to get that hashtag Renew Deadly Class trending so much that we were even able to get a article.
Yeah, from that was from Screen Rant, right?
Yeah, Screen Rant posted an article about our petition. They posted an article specifically about the petition, and then they posted a second article about why the show should come back, and it mentioned the fan base. And the
I actually, I for a couple of months, I wrote for a an offshoot of Screen Rant, comicbookresource.com. It was kind of cool. It was just a bunch of like listicles, like articles that are just broken down into like 10-point lists. And one of the articles that I wrote for it was 10 canceled shows that we miss, and then 10 that we, or 5 that we miss, and then 5 that we don't. And number one for, you know, shows that we miss was Deadly Class, because I'm completely biased and I'm a shill for that show. I just absolutely adore it.
Yeah, Cameron, I just rewatched the whole show 2 weeks ago.
It's just so good.
So I could, yeah, from a comic to TV show adaptation, mm-hmm. Gage, you are missing out on one of the most accurate but also creative differences in interpreting a comic to television. Like, here, this show introduced me, Cameron, to Taylor Hickson, and I'm telling you right now, I don't know if you've watched Motherland.
I have not. I've heard good things.
I definitely, yeah, it's good. It gets better as it goes on, definitely. And the best thing about Motherland Fort Salem, for me at least, is Taylor Hickson again. She is definitely the best thing about that show. And I think even she's better in Motherland than she was in Deadly Class, because she has more to work with, because she's more of a lady.
Oh, that's awesome.
Love her in Deadly Class.
Oh, she's so great.
I think that's...
She embodies the characters so perfectly. All of the actors on that show blew me away.
She adds a layer to it, I think. She adds a layer to it. Like, she adds a bit of... She shows that struggle to not want to show emotion, but it's secretly there layer that the comic book doesn't fully do all
the time. And that was one of the things that I really liked about the show and the way that it treated the source material. Because, like, as opposed to... I've made this comparison with friends before, but, like... You know, you look at a show like Walking Dead, which is a show that I really, really enjoy, even in the parts that aren't so great, which are plentiful. But with Walking Dead, you know, they had the source material and they kind of loosely adapted it for about 5 seasons or 6 seasons or so. And then starting in season 7, it basically was a page to screen adaptation, like 100% accurate. But with Deadly Class, they went kind of the opposite direction, where they started with this kind of page-to-screen adaptation. Everything was pretty much directly from the book. And then, as opposed to remixing events or omitting events, they kind of just added on to them. Like, they added this whole subplot with Lin and with his sister Gao, and the whole stuff with all the stuff with Naya and... You know, they're
I love
that. Oh my god. And the fact that they left it there just breaks me.
You want to know what the subplot that breaks me? Do you know how much I love the Petra character, man? I kept that as my Twitter profile picture for so long after the show got canceled. I hate how they left Billy and Petra. I was so
fucking especially pissed. Too, because you know, with let me just ask real quick, are we allowed to talk spoilers in this, or is that going to be a... Because I know Gage hasn't seen it.
We can talk about, we can hint, but I won't say spoilers. But Gage, basically what Deadly Class is, it's a show set in the 80s, so it has that 80s set vibe. But it's about this homeless kid, Marcus Lopez Aguelo, is the main character. And he gets... recruited into this training academy, this underground school, and it trains assassins. And, well, his Marcus backstory is he's pissed off at Ronald Reagan and wants to kill Ronald Reagan because Ronald Reagan let out a lot of people in the insane asylums. One of those people jumped off, committed suicide. Well, when that happened, that person, when they jumped and committed suicide, landed on top of his parents, killing not only the person who was committing suicide, but his
parents. So he ends up in this boy's home, and then all of this really messed up shit goes on in there. And eventually he gets out, gets recruited by this crew, and just all the characters in the show are so layered and interesting. And it's one of those things where, like, you see a show like this that has characters that are all so distinct and so well developed that it kind of ruins other shows for you because you realize that they're not nearly as distinct or well-developed as the characters in this other show.
Mm-hmm.
At least personally.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. My favorite of the show was Petra because I just, again, love the layer that the Taylor brought to it. But then I read the comics and I saw how different they made it. They definitely wrote her in as more of a lead as the show kept going on. So that's another reason I wanted the show to keep going, because I knew that she was just going to get more and more important as the show went on.
And I mean, especially with the final stuff, that was, because that was one of the things I wanted to touch on with the eventual cancellation, was that they were gearing up to get to this arc in the comics that's seismic event, just completely changes the trajectory of the series.
Finals week or whatever is
and the stuff that happens between Billy and Petra in that arc is like, when you see what they were building on with the Billy and Petra relationship, it just adds this extra layer of tragedy, knowing that they were building towards the finals arc and what was going to happen in there. And like,
it was already rough reading the comic, because from what angle they played it originally. And so it was already rough, but knowing they were going to add another layer on top of it. Oh my gosh. That would have been
It would have broken my heart.
But yeah, Gage, I would have bawled my eyes out. But forget that crap. You know the arc I'm talking about, I'm going to reference. This is like volume 5 with Helmet and Petra.
Dude.
I read that issue. I had to take a couple days off social media, man.
Yeah.
I really did. It was to the point where I thought, I can't look at my Twitter profile anymore. I got to change the picture.
There's some rough
stuff. I was like, I felt so bad for Helmet, man.
Oh, well, don't feel too bad for him. Are you caught up in the comics?
It's a comic book character.
Are you caught up in the comics?
No, I'm still a bit behind. I took a bit of a break after that, a mental break, and then I got back into it.
The last 3 issues that they've released, in particular the one that came out like 2 weeks ago, are probably, I would say probably the biggest developments in the story since Finals. There's some stuff that happens that is just like, oh man, it's absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Yeah.
Wow. I'll definitely have to get caught up then. But yeah, Gage, I highly recommend Deadly Class to you. And I actually have it on Blu-ray, so sometime we meet up, we can watch it together, man. Or I know it's on Amazon Prime.
You do. You
probably have to pay for it.
You do have to pay for it, unfortunately. And that was the thing that
yeah.
It bummed me out. It's worth the money, but like, it bums me out that a show like that is kind of like hidden on Amazon behind this paywall, and then there's all of this shit that is just free, and it's like, I don't know, I just keep kind of wondering why Netflix or Amazon or any of them didn't do some sort of deal so that they could stream it after the season ended, because that would have, like, having it on a streaming site and having it easily accessible, that would have skyrocketed its popularity.
Oh yeah. There's a couple of things I read now. Their accuracy and how true they are, I don't know. But I did read somewhere that Starz picked it up for like a different country. Like over in the UK, it's on Starz. So people who are overseas in the UK, they can watch the show through the Starz. Like Starz, they stream on demand through Starz. So Starz did that, but they don't have US rights. Also, the show is going to get picked up for a second season by Netflix. But Netflix said no because they thought it was too similar to Umbrella Academy.
To Umbrella Academy? Those are like polar opposites.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think the reason why is because they didn't care to do research. They just thought, oh, there are these two academies with teenagers going through drama as well as main plot line. I'm like, that is the most generic way to word it. But I think that's what they were thinking, because it's completely different. You have one that's actually rooted in somewhat actual historical events.
And exactly. Like the Umbrella Academy is a fantasy.
And I'm going to get controversial again to the Umbrella Academy fans out there. Dead the Class isn't cringy like Umbrella Academy.
I mean, well, yeah, I'll give you that. I'm personally I do like Umbrella Academy for different reasons than I liked Deadly Class for, but there are certain elements that are a little cringe. Some of it comes from the writer. I don't know if you guys are all I do is obsess about like people who work on different shit. So like I'm always looking for like the writers and the directors and all of that. And a lot of the episodes of Umbrella Academy were written by this guy named Jeremy Slater, who is pretty infamous on Netflix for writing the very heavily despised live-action Death Note movie. So,
you know,
oh, the anime is fantastic. It's fantastic. It's fantastic until like the last three episodes, and then it gets really dumb. Yeah, pretty much.
Basically,
I really don't like the way that the anime wraps up. I thought it was really stupid, but the rest of it's great. Like, it's a really cool little journey. But yeah, I just I don't know. I feel like the main thing that kind of kept Deadly Class from getting the pickup was for some reason, sci-fi and you know television networks haven't really gotten with the times, so they still depend. They still like. Judge popularity based on live ratings, so like who's watching it while it's airing. And Deadly Class got most of its popularity and most of its views from either on demand streaming on the sci-fi site or from like DVR, which they don't count. So when the numbers like the numbers for the delayed views, there's an article out there that like kind of breaks it down, like the numbers for the delayed views basically put it at one of the most popular shows on TV at the time, but no one was watching it while it was actually airing, which just, you know, it's like they had the numbers, they just weren't in the live.
Oh yeah, I read somewhere, man, that it had the highest gross from pilot to finale of any show.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, if you factor in the delayed views and all that stuff, it was a huge, huge trajectory upwards. So, yeah, I don't know. It always bums me out talking about Deadly Class. My friends and roommates know that if they want to piss me off, all they have to do is talk about Deadly Class, and I'll just launch into a rage.
Yeah, I live with my... mom and my stepdad, and every time I mention anything about sci-fi or I see a sci-fi ad, I'll be like, dear Lord, that's going to be worse than everything they do. Why didn't they bring Deadly Class back? They'll be like, good Lord, can you stop obsessing about it, is what they'll tell me. I'm like, until you watch it, you won't
understand. And I mean, like, oh God, and when you think about it too, like, there was nothing on TV like it at the time. I mean, this is a show that literally had characters in the fifth episode who go and overdose on LSD in a Grateful Dead lot and then spend the rest of the episode heavily tripping on acid. And, you know, obviously that's going to make some people uncomfortable, but it's like, what the fuck? That's what I want out of television. Are you kidding me? That's what I want to see.
Yeah. It pushes the boundary. That's what makes it worth existing.
It's just always going to sting. And I'm always going to be sad that it didn't get season two, but at least we have the comics.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of the few comics that I actually keep up with a lot. You know, there are comics I'll pick up here and there and read, but usually I don't keep up with like a big series for a long period of time. But Deadly Class is like one of the.
I mean, for me personally, I'm a huge comic nerd, so I've been reading a lot of I read a lot of different stuff, but pretty much anything that has Rick Remender's name on it, I will pick up in a heartbeat because he is like he's kind of my main inspiration as a creator and a writer and a storyteller, because I just really admire the way that he crafts his stories and the characters that he brings to life and how he goes about doing what he does. Just it never ceases to amaze me. He's never put out a book that I've thought was anything less than absolutely incredible.
Oh yeah. like I've even read like his Seven to
Eternity. Seven to Eternity is amazing. It's so good.
Yes. Heard rumors that he's trying to work on try to get a different project up. Like another live action project.
There's a couple actually in development right now. They're coming on Netflix on June 5th. I'm going to go ahead and just plug Remender for a second, but on June 5th, they're going to be making one of his books, The Last Days of American Crime. That's going to be a Netflix movie. It comes out on June 5th. It looks awesome. I'm not sure how excited I am about it, though, just because from what I've heard, he had a very subdued role in the actual creation of that movie. So I don't know if I'm going to – I'm cautiously excited because it looks really cool, but I am kind of bummed that he wasn't more involved in it. Outside of that, he's also got multiple projects in the pipeline. I think he's trying to get Black Science developed into a TV series. I think he wants to do Tokyo Ghost as a TV series. And as we speak, Mattson Tomlin, who's the writer on the upcoming Batman movie, just finished the final draft of the pilot for Fear Agent, which is a sci-fi. It's basically this dude from Texas named Heath Hudson, he's called a Fear Agent, and he's like an alien exterminator, and he goes across the galaxy in a rickety spaceship fighting aliens and drinking a lot of whiskey and just being a alcoholic deadbeat, and it's awesome. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think that was the one I read that's what they were.
They are. It's Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are executive producing it too.
Yeah, that one's one I'll definitely have to check out because I definitely watched the Deadly Class show before the comic, but that got me into him, and now I've gotten into some of his other works, so I'll definitely have to check out anything he does. But I guess we can get started on the storytelling part of it. You know, like, did we wanted this episode to be like into storytelling, our favorite storytellers, or what we like about certain directors. We very much hit on Rick Remender, and man, after Deadly Class, I'm interested in anything
he has amazing. To offer.
But it really is. Anybody that listens to this, if you haven't watched that show, definitely check it out. And it's on Amazon. You can buy the Blu-ray. I bought it and pre-ordered it the very second it was announced. Like, I kid you not. Within 10 minutes of Rick Remender announcing that it was finally getting a Blu-ray, because I was a bit scared because they weren't showing price tags on it, and he finally announced the Blu-ray, within 10 minutes, I had already placed my pre-order. And
worth it. Like worth it 100%. It's always better to have...
Oh, yeah. Now, I hate it didn't have special features. But at the same time, the reason why it didn't have that many special features was probably because it sci-fi didn't put out the Blu-ray. It was, I think, Universal. So they just picked up the rights to put it out. They didn't pick up the rights to really give us a full behind the scenes. But there's stuff you can look up online that are behind the scenes. So for a show,
agreed, 100%. And plus, like, I don't know, I got it on the way I've been watching it since it left the air has been I bought the season on the PlayStation Store, and I've just been watching it on there whenever I get a chance. But I do definitely advocate and prefer having physical copies of, you know, movies and TV and all that kind of stuff, because one day everything's going to shut down, and I'd rather have a physical copy.
Yeah, when that would happen. Why would the world shut down? When could that ever happen? I don't know.
It definitely doesn't seem like it's happening right now or anything.
That would never happen. Theaters would never close for months.
Totally.
Right? That just
totally. Oh, I'm sighing.
Yeah, but like seriously, people don't understand the rage I have.
Oh, I agree.
Irritation that I can't go to a movie theater. It's a cinephile. Like, I'm a cinephile at heart. So for someone, like, let's say an NFL football player, let's say any NFL football player, they have like an itch to go practice and play with their team, right? Mine is, I'd love to go to the movies at least every month or so just to check something out. And there was a lot of movies I wanted to go see before they got taken away. Now, luckily, in February was the last time I went to go see a couple of movies in February.
Thank Lord God I didn't go see Fantasy Island. I went and watched Birds of Prey.
How was Invisible Man?
Invisible.
Oh, I expect nothing less. I adore Lee Whannell. He's an incredible director.
Lee Whannell, right now, I'm pretty sure, you know, if you watch not just my intro or intro episode, but the last episode, mm-hmm. you know how much I love James Wan. So, Lee Whannell's getting up there, man. He's getting close. If he can give me another movie on the level of Invisible Man, if not a tad bit better, he's going to be neck and neck with James Wan.
Have you seen Upgrade?
That movie was phenomenal.
Upgrade is apparently getting a TV series, which I'm very excited about. But, yeah, there's apparently going to be some sort of, like, sequel TV series set in the same universe with the same characters. I think with the same characters. I don't know. But I'm just, like, I'm a total slut for the gory kung fu cyborg ninja shit. Like, are you kidding me? That's, like, my bread and butter. I grew up on B-movies. This is, like, everything I've ever wanted.
I mean, if you grew up on B-movies, I've got a B-movie to float by you. Pretty random and obscure.
Oh, my God. I love Overlord.
Produced by J.J. Abrams.
I love that movie. That movie's incredible.
I love that. I went to the group about five of my friends to go watch that in November when it came out. And this friend's probably going to watch this, but I mean this with all intents of love, bud. Man, you were annoying my ass when I was trying to watch the movie. He was constantly asking questions about, what's this? Oh, okay, what's going on here? And I'm like, Alex, I wanted to look over and go, hey.
Well, it's like, that's one of my pet peeves. It's like, if I'm trying to get into a movie and someone's talking and they're asking a bunch of questions, usually my response is, all of your questions will probably be answered if you just watch. Like, they're...
Bro, I said that once to one of my family members, and they got PO'd at me, like, how dare you be like smart with me? I'm like, just watch the movie.
Oh, man, it's like trying to, you ever see The Prestige? The Christopher Nolan one. I imagine trying to explain the plot of that movie to someone who is watching it for the first time and asking questions with all the non-linear editing and all of that. It's like, it'll make sense at the end. Just get there.
And if it doesn't make sense, like it didn't make sense for me, just watch the ending a second time and it'll make sense. And, like, and then there's some people out there, but I don't want to watch the ending a second time.
It's very
time.
Simple.
So just watch it a second time.
Oh, he's incredible.
I love Christopher Nolan, man. I am so excited.
Jesus Christ,
excited for Tenet.
I saw that. Like, I saw the trailer like two or three days ago, and all I could think is like, oh, so this is how you top Inception. Okay, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think this is, for me, it's easier for me to get, I think, invested for what I've seen so far in this than Inception. And really why is Inception's not quite on the, I mean, Tenet's not quite the mind-bending level. At least, you know, you had this whole shot of a little street being cranked up with these buildings for Inception. Which, again, I love Inception. It's like an 8 or 9 out of 10 movie, and there are scenes in that movie that are masterclass. But I do think Tenet has potential to top it because it's just a concept that not only do I like a bit more than Inception,
bro, there are people fighting forward in time with someone moving backward in time. How the fuck could any other filmmaker do something like that?
Uh-huh, and it's like what I mentioned in, like, prior episodes of the podcast. It's definitely one of those things where we got to be thankful that Christopher Nolan exists because he's one of those few filmmakers out there that can get massive budgets, massive big names, and really make those original visions out there. Because there's a lot of directors out there in this age of remakes and blockbusters that you don't really get that push in the envelope, whether it's visuals or storytelling. And Christopher Nolan does it with every movie he does. He even did it to an extent with the Dark Knight trilogy, which is why 100%. I love that trilogy.
I mean, and him and a couple other filmmakers, I mean, like, so I think he's a good example of, like, big budget storytelling with really complex narratives. And he makes blockbusters for, I mean, I don't want to sound like a fucking first-year film student here, but, like, he makes blockbusters for smart people. Like, you have to really kind of pay attention and, like, understand the mechanics of the universe to get invested. But
think that's why I'm a
seller. But I don't know.
People for the bookshelf scene, I love it for the bookshelf scene because I see it as a metaphor. I don't see it as he's literally behind the bookshelf being the ghost. I see it as he's falling into this black hole and he's just reliving memories of his life. You know, he's just replaying. It's like his life is flashing before his eyes, and it was just a way that he wanted to show that on the
screen. I mean, we could pick apart Interstellar for hours, but I feel like we'd be here for hours. Exactly.
And we wouldn't really get that much closer, but it is, but it's a mind fucking away with the visuals are gorgeous, and Matthew McConaughey really does give it his all.
I agree. So Christopher Nolan, I think, is a good example of just a filmmaker that I respect his vision. I respect what he's going for. And I think he's a storyteller that is operating on a very different level than a lot of other directors. Another one that I'm pretty sure you have heard of, or at least seen one of his movies, is Robert Eggers, who wrote and directed The Lighthouse.
Yep. I've seen The Lighthouse. I have not seen The Witch, but I have seen
Robert Eggers, before he started making films, was a historian. So that's why when you go to his movies, all of his dialogue, especially in these period pieces, all of his dialogue is period accurate. So all of the dialect from Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson in The Lighthouse was based on actual, like, sailor dialect rooted in that time period. And with The Witch, yeah, which you should definitely watch. The thing that always blows people's minds when I tell them is that the set design for that movie, they created this set that was basically period accurate to what it takes place in Puritan New England. And the set is based on actual, like, designs that Puritan New England people would have implemented in building their houses. And they made these sets with period accurate tools. So he was just going like as incredibly historically accurate as he possibly could to try and just maintain that. I have nothing but respect for that. I think that's absolutely insane that someone would take that detail and that time to, like, actually make that happen. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I definitely got that vibe that he knew a lot of about history, because I've only seen The Lighthouse, but it was definitely had that historically accurate feel. I mean, from the aspect ratio he used to the black and white to the dialogue, it definitely felt like I was watching something ripped from that time frame, being like the 1890s.
Agreed. And I mean, that movie, just in addition to being gorgeously shot and period accurate and filled with, like, two of the best performances I've seen in years, it's also just a really cool story.
Yeah.
Just a really interesting concept.
Cameron, I'm interested in hearing your opinions on this. A very interesting thing that blew up for a bit after watching The Lighthouse, you praised Robert Pattinson.
I think he's going to be absolutely phenomenal. I can't wait. I think it's going to bring a layer to the character that has not since been, that hasn't been there in other adaptations.
I agree. And the reason why I agree on this is it's not just Pattinson, because if I had never watched another movie he did other than Twilight, I would still have some faith, because I could tell that Twilight had problems other than the script. They had problems with the script. It had problems with the set design. It had problems with the direction. It wasn't the acting. But then I watched Good Time. I love Good Time. The Safdie brothers are some of my favorite directors right now. Between Good Time and Uncut Gems, those movies
are... I feel like a fake film fan because I still haven't seen either of those movies.
It's okay not to see Good Time, because it flew under the radar. Uncut Gems is on Netflix, so you can check it out on there. It came out on Netflix about three, four days ago.
It's okay, Cameron. I still haven't watched it either.
It's really good.
I don't feel quite as bad.
Yeah. And hey, I can't get offended at Gage because if I do, he'll probably get
offended. Yeah, you better not bring up freaking Krueger again.
Hey man, hey man, I'll bring up Krueger. I'll be the guy that pokes the hornet's nest here. I listened to your last episode. I just got to say, big ass Wes Craven fan right here.
All
right. I think you guys might be okay. Misinterpreting his style just a tad.
It's okay. Hey Clay.
Okay. Hey.
Fucking suck.
Go ahead.
I don't know. It's just when it comes to Wes Craven. Personally speaking, I grew up on like the Nightmare movies.
Me so too.
One and three are like very deeply ingrained in my soul. Dream Warriors is by far my favorite of the entire series.
Oh my god, dude, that was my first Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
It's so good.
It like, is the girl so good.
The fucking TV through the head. Come on.
Welcome to prime time, bitch.
Yeah, my biggest thing again, like, it's not that I don't dislike Wes Craven. I really respect his vision and his storytelling. For whatever reason, I'm more of a Michael Myers guy myself. I love John Carpenter's Halloween. The original Halloween is just,
see, and that's also a thing with me. Like, I mean, I like the concept of Michael Myers, but to be completely honest, I enjoy. Yeah. Somebody give me some crap for this one. I enjoyed the Rob Zombie remakes. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, I do. I think they're good.
Yeah, I mean, I love them.
I think the
I like Halloween 2 remake more than the first one.
I think the Halloween series is. I kind of look at the Halloween series kind of similarly to Star Wars in that it's a series that, as a whole, I do love all of the movies to a certain extent. But I also kind of think that there hasn't really been a good one for a while. Like, yeah. with Halloween, I think that they were... I really think that the only, like, ones that I would call good movies are the first and the most recent one. And with Star Wars, I can really only say that I can call the first two good movies. So, like, there's series that I love unconditionally, but I also kind of think that both are very, very flawed and have a limit. The mixture between good and bad is very, very evident.
Yeah, and well, like people talking about, like you, I mean, you spoke of Star Wars, why can't I think of his name? The director.
J'Abrams?
No, the original one.
Oh, George Lucas.
George Lucas, sorry. 12-hour shifts suck.
Just get ready for a lot of really angry nerds in your comment section.
It's okay. now...
an anchor, we don't have comments.
Maybe just stick with anchor then. Comment sections are hell nowadays.
Yeah. I don't want to put this on my YouTube and then me get burned.
I can't help it, man. I'm sorry.
Engage, we're cool.
I'm tired of shit.
You're
dude, I forgot my name was Gage for a minute, so it's okay. But no, I'm a huge fan of the Star Wars, of the Star Wars universe. And even though I forgot George Lucas's name for a split second, in different interviews that I've heard about him, like there were a lot of things that he originally wanted in the Star Wars universe. That, I mean, just somewhat didn't make sense. But then, like, some people say he was, like, really hard to work with. So I can see how things could be a little flawed. But I can also see, you know, how he would be in, a characteristic standpoint of who George Lucas is. You know, I can honestly think of myself kind of like him. As in, I want usually my ways... Instead of, I will definitely listen to things, but if it's something that I want in the cut for real, then that's fine. one example of that being like he wanted Ewoks being completely different than what they originally were. You know what I mean? They were supposed to be a whole lot scarier, and then sometimes somebody said it was supposed to be something else. There was supposed to be a different kind of Wookiee, something. There's like 100 different explanations for what the Ewoks could have been, is what I've heard. But there's also, you know, like Darth Maul was originally supposed to be a female. You know, and I don't even think the female was even a Zabrak. You know what I mean? It was just something that was later on implemented to do certain things and to make the storyline somewhat kind of go along. Now, throughout the entire Star Wars everything, all the movies, there's not been a single female Sith Lord. So if Darth Maul was a woman, I think that would be kind of cool. But through expanded universe and video games and stuff like that, we do see that, but we never really get to see one, you know, somebody in the movie other than a split second in the last Star Wars movie, The Rise of Skywalker, where Rey somehow was a, you know, you see.
She had her vision.
She had her vision of being a Sith. And so, in ways, I can kind of see that, but but then she never really did it, you know. Sorry, spoilers. If you have it, yeah.
Hey, they're shark teeth.
Freaking shark teeth.
Oh my god.
My biggest thing with Rise of Skywalker, you can trash that movie all you want, and I will agree with you. It has a lot of problems, but I enjoy it a lot. And the reason why I do is, I do still have nostalgia for the original trilogy. I'm a prequel guy first growing up.
Those were the first Star Wars movies a lot of people saw, you know, our age.
But yeah, so I've loved Han, so I was a bit bitter of how they handled him in Force Awakens. But at the same time, I knew Harrison wanted to go out, so he finally got his piece. And I like how they brought him back in Rise of Skywalker. But yeah, some weaknesses of the movie, definitely. You're telling me that Ben Solo literally, like, Adam Driver's only line after he turns good in the movie.
I never really realized that. Oh, no, he also says, Ray, no, when he's, like, cradling her.
Really
counts, but
I guess he does.
That's basically it, though.
I guess he does.
What pissed me off,
but the only one I remember him.
Sorry.
Now, I did like the shrug. The shrug.
That was definitely.
You know, that reminded me of Han, so I liked seeing that. I was a Han super fan. Like, the Han Solo is what makes me want to rewatch the original trilogy. I've never been much of a Luke person, but I respect people who are. I'm more of an Anakin guy myself, but that comes from watching the prequels.
Well, personally speaking, I went and saw, because I think I might be a little older than you guys. I'm 25. I don't know how old you guys are. But you'll be how old?
I'll be 20.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 20.
I'll be 20.
At well, when I when I was a kid, I went and saw all the prequels in theaters when they were coming out. But before that, they did this re-release of the original trilogy in theaters, and so my first experience seeing Star Wars was when I think I was like 3. And my mom took me to see A New Hope in theaters to like get me stoked on Star Wars because she knew that the prequels were coming out and she wanted to take me to those. So I saw like A New Hope and Empire and Return of the Jedi in theaters, and that was a really cool experience.
That's back awesome.
But I was always much more attached to the original trilogy than I was the prequels, even though I did see the prequels at kind of the opportune time. I've since then kind of grown a slight disdain for them, in some avenues. I think that there are some things about them that I do really enjoy, but personally speaking, I am not much a fan of the prequels.
And I acknowledge it because I am by no means do I think the prequels are masterpieces. I acknowledge on a structure level they do have problems. I acknowledge that people want to say that they're CGI heavy, and you can argue that. I personally love Revenge of the Sith. It's a bit nostalgia for me because that was the movie when I watched it. That was the moment that sinked my love for Star Wars forever. Now, again, I watched the prequels as they came out. And what I mean by that was I didn't watch Star Wars until I was about 5 or 6. And they were at my house, and I was out with my parents at the time when I was about 5 or 6. I can't remember, like, what store we were at. I think it was a Best Buy. But they had released all the Star Wars movies, like, 1 through 6, and I wanted to get all of them. And we ended up getting all of them. And then I watched all of them, and I watched them in chronological order instead of release order. So that's how I watched the prequels first. So my first Star Wars theater experience was the sequels. So that's why the sequels will have a bit of a soft spot for me, but I acknowledge they are much more troubled, at least in my opinion, than the prequels. But I completely acknowledge and respect people who, you know, can't make good points for that the sequels did this better.
Here's my only thing about the
sequels handled characters in a sense of, you know, saying goodbye to characters better, like introducing and exiting out Padme was handled in a bit quirky. And you can argue that Anakin turning to the dark side was a little too fast, but those are like nitpicks to me. And the reason why they're nitpicks is they're just things that get brushed over in the movie rather than things that are like key focal points, because the key focal point of Revenge of the Sith is his turn to the dark side. And I guess another reason why I love that movie so much is the opening scene to that movie and the Mustafar stuff where Obi-Wan versus Anakin. And I
think it's John Williams in all the Star Wars movies. There's a great YouTuber that I really I like his stuff a lot. He's the Cosmonaut Variety Hour. And he also shares my opinions in not being a huge fan of the prequels. But one of the things he says is like he kind of thinks that John Williams saw the prequels and was like, oh shit, I gotta save these movies. So he just made these amazing scores, and you know, that's like half why I like them. I like the prequels. But I think my biggest problem with them though is that if you were, it's not my biggest problem, but one of the problems I have is that if you actually watch the movies in order, like episode 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5, 6, it kind of nullifies the impact of the Darth Vader twist, because you know from the get-go who he is if you watch Phantom Menace first. You have a very clear idea of that. And so, like, the whole kind of, like, big twist of Empire just gets, you know, tossed out the window if you have this previous knowledge because you watch them in order. So,
yeah, and I think I don't love Empire as much as so many people because I didn't get to experience that plot twist, because when I watched Star Wars for the first time, I did do chronological. So I do think that may have been a reason why. Now, don't get me wrong, Empire is always in my top 4 or a lot of times in my top 3 in Star Wars rankings. It never falls out of that. But it never has really been my number 1, and I think it's because I did chronological instead of release.
But no, I mean, the prequels are fine for the most part. There's a lot of stuff in them that I am not I'm not crazy about. I think some major character development gets kind of shafted to focus on superfluous things to sell toys. Like, I would much rather have seen in Revenge of the Sith, I would much rather spent more time with Anakin, you know, contemplating his turn to the dark side and those elements of the hypocrisy of the Jedi that led to his.
Yeah, I definitely see your point, Cameron. So yeah, I think thinking about it that way does make a lot of sense. But anyway, I think it's about that time, maybe for some wrap up time.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty good one. We can do some wrap up. So I'm going to leave some time for Cameron. You can do some wrap up. Gage, you can do some wrap up, and then I'll do some wrap up. And then all three of us can do a wrap up, and then we can get back on Monday.
I'll go ahead and start and just say, you know, I'm Cameron. You can follow me on Twitter at Cameron Boxy. I tweet a lot of hot takes about film and music and comic books and the like, and the the takes are all very spicy. So if this is any indication, you know, give me a follow if you want. If not, that's fine. I'm a screenwriter. I'm working on some projects, so keep an eye out. I'm going to be trying to keep all my stuff on there.
Yeah, continue this. Part two, I want to get into your screenwriting, man. Like, more into screenwriting. You'd be good screenwriting.
Well, I'm going to keep some of the trade secrets to myself, but I'll give you some of the... I'll give you guys some tidbits and things that I've done that help my own process come to fruition and such.
But, sounds great, man. Well, thank you so much for that, dude.
Yeah, of course. And thank you guys for having me on the pod. I'm happy to be here. If you guys want to invite me back at some point, I'd be happy to jump on again.
Absolutely, dude.
Yeah, I really enjoyed having you on. We really enjoyed having you on. So I'd be more than
thank
glad.
Thank you very much. I'm always open to the opportunity.
Every once in a great while, man.
But my food is ready. I'm going to go ahead and let you guys get to your wrap up. Yes, all my curry. All right, yeah, I'm very excited.
Well, your curry wins.
All right. Well, you guys have a good rest of your night. Enjoy your wrap up sesh, and I will get back to you guys on Monday for part two.
Heard that, man.
All right. Peace out, guys.
Awesome. Talk to you later, Cameron. We'll see you for part two. Peace.
Alrighty, guys. Well, that was Cameron, and this is another episode of
all right, guys. So that's another episode of the 3 a.m. Gaming Jamming Cinephiles, and we will talk to you again some other time. And remember, guys, as I say in every end of the videos, always follow your dreams and never, ever stray from your goals. Also, stay tuned for other things coming from Clay and I. Last time I had mentioned that I am working on a secret project. This secret project will be released sometime soon. I just don't know when. I don't know how. But I have some ideas that I'm going to be throwing out.
You one idea. I'm obviously not going to admit it over the pod right now. But I'm excited for people to hear it. And guys, I have an announcement. I have somebody who has been the scorer and composer for my first ever feature, Internal Fracture, guys. He's Santiago Barcelli. Guys, you need to follow him on Insta and Twitter. I'm going to go look him up real quick while we're still on so I can state his profiles.
Absolutely. So I've heard
him because you guys really do need to
some of the score. Granted, because you know I'm the co-director and you know also co-writer of Eternal Fracture, helping Clay out with his stuff. It's absolutely amazing. And this guy, man, of everything I've heard of Santiago, I mean, this guy is great. You know, he's somebody who can, you know, say that he can do something, and the guy is really a go-getter, and he has went above and beyond helping us with achieving our goals, and you know we're gonna do the same with helping him achieve his. So you guys give him a follow, and I'm pretty sure Clay will have his Instagram up here.
Yeah, I have it pulled up right now. His Insta is Santi, that's Santi _ Bacchi, that is Bacchi. Guys, give him a follow on Instagram. I'll go look up his Twitter real quick. And guys, he also has a YouTube where he's been posting the score for the movie. Guys, you guys really,
it is absolutely really amazing. And again, like I said,
it's really good.
You know, just over the top, next level stuff. I am so excited to be able to work with Clay and people who actually care about, you know, the process and understanding and the blood, sweat, and tears that really go into everything you make. You know, and this is just going, it's going to be mind blowing, and I cannot wait to get it started.
I can't either, man. I can't either. And on Twitter, he is Santi Bacchi. That is SantiBacche. Guys, give him a follow on there as well. And YouTube, I'm going to go pull that up as well. Guys, you got to give him a sub on YouTube, because that way, if you do that, notifications, you'll be notified of the score every time a song drops. I am re-uploading them on my channel at times when I get a second with my own take on, you know, giving thanks to certain people through the process. I posted the first full version of what I viewed to be the possible trailer song, which is what I sent you, Gage. And I, man, that's amazing. But he's put another song out there, man, that I can't wait for you to hear. It's definitely very different than what the initial song I sent you, but it still fits for like that chaotic feel I told you we're going
to
get into.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I can't wait to hear it here soon.
And on YouTube, he is Santiago Bacchello. That is SantiagoBacchella. Just give him a sub on there as well, guys. And he's got two videos so far. One's called The Start of the Show, Music from the Motion Picture Internal Fracture, and 101, Music from the Motion Picture Internal Fracture. And he has a logo. Not only has he been scoring our movie, guys, he even made us a logo in the graphic design. This guy's been crushing it, and I can't be more excited to have met this guy in the way I met him through the Deadly Class group chat. Just that group chat's full of people who not only just love that show, but love filmmaking, have got into filmmaking, and maybe if he's into it or not, if he's into it, we might bring him
absolutely
on
and seriously, one, I cannot wait to meet him. Just everything I've heard about him, he's a great guy. And he went way above and beyond to help us with this project. I mean, seriously, I've never been this close to getting something finished like this. I mean, it's truly inspirational to me to be able to get my stuff done with you. But just to think, like, not too long ago, this was all just hearsay in computer applications class in college, and now it's all coming together.
Watching
a game about a damn dude with a giant
computer app
thing. I don't even freaking remember. Like, just the class was just weird. But us trying to figure things out, and seriously, I think, you know, you and I meeting each other, this is something that's truly inspired me to continue on my work. And I know two ways, in ways, you know, you and I are, you know, I would say meant to be partners, dude, because this is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this, and I think I'm going to see if he wants to come on for an episode. And I've had this thought episode as well. I think we should have an episode where it's just the three of us, me, you, and Santiago. But then another episode where it's me, you, mm-hmm. Santiago, and Corey. Have the whole internal fracture core four on, and you know, we'll talk once we get really into the movie, or if it's out, then we'll kind of like discuss our
absolutely.
The process of that and stuff like that. That's for like down the line. And eyeballing it right now, guys, we do have a project, Kennedy Ann the Straight Man, that you can follow on Instagram at Kennedy Ann the Straight Man. And we're going to be working on that before Internal Fracture. So I would say the best bet for us shooting Internal Fracture would be late summer. So I wouldn't expect this to come out until the earliest towards the end of this year, just to give us a very big window of editing. And just so nothing
absolutely.
Feels rushed with the
and
potential for
again,
this
guys, you know, projects and stuff like that, they take a lot of time and a lot of, you know, dedication to this craft. And regardless on how long it takes,
yeah,
you can succeed anything that you put your mind to. And that's one thing that, you know, Clay and I can say both from our standpoints of filmmaking and also our standpoints on everything else that we do, that we put absolutely 100% into everything that we do. And I know there's no such thing, but you can even say 110%. Because, you know, both of us, you know, and Clay inspires me, and, you know, to do what I do. And I always try to inspire Clay to do whatever he's got to do. And so just having that team, like, effort of, you know, being there for each other, not only just talking about work, but hanging out, you know, building relationships with these people. I can truly say Clay is one of my best friends and also my partner and co-worker in making these films. And truly it makes everything just a welcoming environment. So that's one other lesson I can teach or I can talk about is love and compassion for everybody in the group, everybody who you're with. And regardless of different viewpoints, you always have each other to fall back on with just about anything throughout the process.
Oh, yes, yes. And I really appreciate that. And I view you as a very, very close friend. And it is amazing to see someone that you're so close with be able to just be able to not only, you know, vibe and hang out and chill, but also be able to, you know, create projects like these. It's truly amazing. And what you said about inspiration, I'm going to give a shout out to a filmmaker right now. He's somewhat underground. This is a surprise. I haven't mentioned this guy to you. He's called Michael Matteo Rossi. He has a film coming out called Shadows. I recommend, Gage, whenever you get a sec in the coming days, look up Michael Matteo Rossi on Instagram. You should be able to find something. If you don't know how to spell it or you find difficulty, I will figure out a way for you to get to know this guy. He's followed me on Twitter. That was the filmmaker I told you who followed me. I have the utmost respect for this guy. He has been doing this for a while, and this is the guy, Gage, I told you that has been giving numerous upon numerous of inspirational pursue your passion tweets that he's been putting up, and he's currently working on a film. I don't know if you know this YouTuber by the name of Tyrone Magnus. Tyrone Magnus is going to be a character. He's going to be acting as a character in this movie. And I watched the trailer for Shadows, man. I put up a tweet for this thing. I retweeted his trailer announcement. Guys, his trailer's pretty good. It's definitely something I'll check out. And just the process of me accepting that this is what I wanted to do, that I wanted to try to be a filmmaker, I've really looked at underground, not just filmmakers, but artists as well, man. There's some underground artists I've been getting into that are really, really good stuff that we could announce in coming episodes. One is Transgressions Music. Transgressions, they're a good little rock group that's underground that deserves a lot more praise than what they get. And if you don't know Transgressions, Gage, they're one of my followers. You can check them out and their songs, and I can introduce you to them. But Michael Matteo Rossi is awesome, very inspirational, and he really helps keep me on the path that I need to be when I'm not talking to you sometimes, and maybe I feel discouraged because I get in a bit of writer's block, and then he just, all of a sudden, it almost feels like an act of just Mother Nature, or just right when I needed it, here comes a tweet from this guy who's, you know, been doing this for a while, and just very inspirational stuff. And just really awesome stuff. And the likelihood of him watching this, because he's such a busy man, is it low? Yes, but still, man, if you ever watch this episode, Michael, man, you're awesome, dude. I'd love nothing more than to get to just to see how your mind works from a creative outlet, and maybe collab if there's something you've got an idea for that I think I could do, or vice versa. And potential someday, maybe if we build ourselves up enough to where you could see this someday, maybe start on the podcast.
That's awesome, man. I can't wait. Gage, he's really awesome. And the way you've even talked about him just sounds absolutely amazing. And I can't wait to help, you know, get some of our followers over there to come and watch some of his stuff, man. You know, like I said in our first episode, you know, make friends with people who have the same passions. And usually, if you help them, they'll help you. Scratch my back, I scratch yours. And, you know, and just like, you know, in different ways, you can get a lot of things accomplished for little to no money at all. You know, whenever you are helping other people get their names out. And that's something that can be worth more than any amount of money, in my opinion. But other than that, guys, I think if that's okay with you, Clay. I think this is about time to wrap up, my friends. And like I said, if you guys have anything, you know, any questions or concerns or anything like that with filmmaking, you know, maybe you can shoot us some voice messages and stuff like that. And maybe we can see about, you know, talking through some of these issues that you may be having and sit down with some people that we know and get them on to answer specific questions as well if they can. But I also want to get a guy on here. I need to talk to him, but his name is, he is a videographer, and he has done quite a few things, including a small documentary-type music video for 21 Pilots. His name is Scott Green. Hopefully, I can get him on and talk to us about some videoing and stuff. But yeah, that's coming up here pretty soon. Hopefully, if he's okay with that, and you know, I will leave Clay to sign us off.
All right, guys. Yeah, I like what you said about Scott. I remember you mentioning him that'll be a good guy to bring on sometime if all that works out. But all right, guys, I appreciate you guys listening. And this was another episode of 3AM Gaming Jam Cinephiles. Today we began to hit on storytelling, our favorite aspects of it, certain storytellers we like. And this is a two-parter. This will continue. We're shooting for Monday. We're going to bring back Cameron. We really appreciate having him on. And again, guys, really appreciate you guys watching and listening to this. My score for my film is being made. My script is being wrapped up. I'll keep you guys posted on my Instagrams. Twitter, I'm Castu95. And on Instagram, I'm Clay.Stewart, that 549436. Gage is GageWilson949. You can follow him on there on Instagram. Again, we'll keep you guys posted. I also have a link in my bio to Kennedy and the Straight Man, a project we're working on. But yeah, guys, I'm very glad you guys listened to this, and really excited to continue the podcast. But the film is really coming together. Kennedy and the Straight Man's coming together pretty soon. But yeah, guys, check out those guys I told you to check out. We appreciate you guys listening. And I'm telling you, in my point in if you would have told me 3-4 years ago I'd have a podcast, about to make a movie, filming a web series, and have connections to the people I have now, I'd tell you you're an idiot and you're on. So if you have anything you want to do in this outlet that requires maybe to build a connection, then do just that. You know, establish your opinions and your fandoms, because chances are, regardless of how unpopular they are, there may be people out there that share them. And that can build a friendship, whether it's, you know, really close, like me and Gage, and it can build friendships over social media, man. It's just an awesome thing, and I appreciate you guys listening. We'll continue this Monday.
Later, Caters.